Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our joint House and Senate Transportation Committee meeting. Calling it to order. My name is Frank Hornsey. I'm the chair of the House Transportation and Transit Policy and Oversight Division. We will have some senators trickling in. They're having their other committees meeting now in the Senate, and so they're at those committee meetings, but we understand several senators will be joining us, and if we're going to wait, we want to make sure we have our chair here, so and so very happy to have Senator Murphy with us. And members, this may be the last time that Senator Murphy joins a joint House and Senate Transportation Committee meeting, so I want to thank you, Senator Murphy, for all of the work you've done over these many years. It's been really great to work with you. And I think when the history of transportation legislation is written in the state of Minnesota, there'll be a lot of references to Steve Murphy, especially when it comes to traffic safety. And so we're very, very happy that you're here today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I feel the same way. I've always had a great time working with the members of the House in, you know, passing transportation policy, and we've had quite a few laughs along the way.
That's right.
I mean, there's a little bit of headbutting now and again, but mostly it was all in good fun, and we seem to get our work done.
Well, yes.
Right, Mary Liz?
So, members, we're going to hear from several witnesses today. But before we do that, I want to just explain a little about our hearing. We're not hearing any specific bill. This is an informational hearing only. I view this as perhaps the beginning of what I hope will be a collaborative process with everyone that has a stake in traffic safety and helping to craft legislation between now and the beginning of the 2011 session that will be very comprehensive in nature, that will continue Minnesota's tradition of being a leader in traffic safety and particularly addressing the issue of distracted driving. We'll be hearing from the Department of Public Safety about some of their initiatives as well. I know they have a special day set aside already in August to address this issue in terms of a public education campaign. So, again, we look at this as the beginning of a process. We want to get as many voices as possible involved, but it's certainly our intention next year to move forward with a very comprehensive and thorough legislation to address distracted driving. We've already done that in terms of texting while driving. We had a very good bipartisan vote in 2008, legislation signed into law by the governor. We were the third state in the country to do that, and now there's 19 states. So we want to continue Minnesota's leadership in that area, and want to welcome additional members that are here. With that, we want to start our hearing with a message from the Secretary of Transportation. As many of you know, Secretary LaHood has been very much engaged in this issue of distracted driving. It's one of the highest priorities at the federal level in terms of the U.S. Department of Transportation. The Secretary was in town a couple of months ago. We discussed this hearing with his staff, and he was really anxious to provide us some opening comments in terms of our deliberations here today. And so with that, we've got a short video queued up of Secretary LaHood, and I don't know if we have to dim the lights, but we'll We'll have that now for you.
Hello, I'm Ray LaHood, U.S. Secretary of Transportation. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss one of the most serious threats to public safety in the United States, distracted driving. I can promise you that on my watch, we will leave no stone unturned in the effort to get drivers to stop texting, talking on the phone, and using any electronic device while they're behind the wheel. I believe this is a life and death issue, an issue with the power to tragically change the lives of every one of us in a matter of seconds. You simply can't meet and talk with the victims of distracted driving accidents, as I have done, without giving the strong impression that we've got to get a handle on this problem immediately. I know many of you share my passion about this. Minnesota has demonstrated real leadership in the fight against distracted driving, and I commend you for doing that. In fact, even before I arrived at DOT, your state had already banned texting while driving. And I know many of you on the state Senate and House Transportation Committees have worked very hard to pass this and other critical traffic safety legislation, including a strong graduated driver's license program. There's no question these are important steps in the right direction. I appreciate Senator Murray and Representative Hornstein's leadership in convening this hearing to determine what more you can do to make Minnesota roads even safer. I'm also very grateful to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety for making this a real front burner issue to the point of assigning a state coordinator to focus on distracted driving. And I want you to know we're doing our part here in Washington too. The National Summit on Distracted Driving we sponsored last fall set the stage for a number of actions by federal and state governments, private industry, researchers, and dedicated consumer activists. As you may know, at the time of our summit, President Obama signed an executive order prohibiting all government workers from texting while driving on the job or while using government-owned electronic devices. In January, we used our current authority to issue a ban prohibiting commercial truck and bus drivers from texting while driving or using their handheld cell phone or other devices that take a driver's attention off the road. I've personally met with telecommunication and insurance industry executives, encouraging them to go further than they already have to support an all-out ban on all forms of electronic communication by drivers when their vehicles are in motion. Meanwhile, our National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the FEC are working together to explore a range of options, including cell phone blockers or filters that could prevent calls or text messages in moving vehicles. Our distraction.gov website is really helping to spread the message with great news and information about distracted driving. And we've even gotten Oprah Winfrey on board too. In the end, we know it's going to take a lot of public education and peer pressure coupled with strong and consistent law enforcement and sensible legislation to get this job done. And each of us bears a personal responsibility to practice what we preach, model good behavior for young drivers, and talk to our teens about what safe driving really means. Thank you, Minnesota, for all that you're doing to help us win this fight. Working together, we will make our roads safer for everyone. Good luck to all of you.
Well, and just a little note here, Senator Murphy's grew up very close to Ray LaHood's former congressional district. Everyone knows Ray LaHood was a Republican congressman before he was appointed by President Obama to the USDOT, and I understand that your mom was a supporter of his. And we have our guest today is from Illinois, so we have a whole Illinois contingent here. So, members, before I call on Ms. Weinholzer, we're going to hear from Ms. Weinholzer. Then there's another short video we're going to show from that was actually aired on a local TV station last night about what this actually looks like when people are texting while driving at 60 miles an hour for a half mile on I-35W. But I would really encourage folks to take a look at this distraction.gov. I mean, I pulled some incredible stats off of that earlier today. Studies showing that talking on the cell phone is the equivalent to the 0.08 alcohol inhibition. We have 80% of all crashes and 65% of near crashes involving some type of distraction. 6,000 deaths in the United States in 2008 alone, 500,000 injuries related to distracted driving. So this is a very, very urgent and serious issue, and I appreciate everybody's interest and attendance today. So with that, we'll start today with Gail Weinholzer from AAA Minnesota and Iowa. Welcome back to our committee.
Thank you, Representative Portstein, and members of the committee, Senator Murphy as well. I want to thank you for your service. Over the past 7 years I've been with AAA, it's always been a welcome office as I've approached you with traffic safety legislation, so I appreciate that. As I was introduced, my name is Gail Weinholzer. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for AAA Minnesota, Iowa. As you know, AAA was formed more than 100 years ago to advocate for roadway safety issues across our nation. We've advocated for dedicated transportation funding, uniform signage, and the development of the interstate highway system. We've also advocated for legislation that addresses driver behavioral issues. However, it's become apparent that we and other roadway safety organizations are continually chasing poor driving behaviors with legislation. People drink and drive, so we legislate against it. People drive aggressively, so we legislate against it. People text and drive, so we legislate against it. Needless to say, in each of these cases, people's driving behavior was irresponsible, other people died, and society stepped in and said enough. In an attempt to get a better understanding of the poor driving behaviors and attitudes that foster them, AAA conducted a nationwide traffic safety culture survey, and I'm here today to share briefly with those results with you, particularly as they apply to distracted driving. As I mentioned, we conducted the AAA Traffic Safety Culture Survey. It was conducted because we kill more than 40,000 people on our roadways every year and have for the past four decades with the exception of 1 year. We injure more than 2.5 million people on our roadways every year, but there, for the most part, isn't any outrage. In fact, society may have become a bit complacent, perhaps even accepting of these facts and statistics. The goals of the traffic safety culture were fourfold. One was to investigate the public's traffic safety-related knowledge, attitudes, behaviors, and experiences, to create a baseline of measure of traffic safety culture in the United States, enhancing our ability to monitor change in the future, to guide traffic safety research and public outreach, and finally to foster dialogue about traffic safety and how to improve it. What were our overall findings? In general, society doesn't have a very good understanding of the magnitude of the problem. When asked to estimate the number of people that are killed or injured on our roadways every year, the average United States citizen grossly underestimates the numbers of people that are killed and injured. In fact, the most popular and frequent response of roadway fatalities was well under 10,000, and we know that we kill more than 40,000 every year on our roadways. When asked to rate the seriousness of the problem posed by a number of different traffic safety behaviors, a large proportion of drivers rated many of the behaviors as serious, but of course admitted and engaging in them anyway. In fact, 3 out of 4 drivers believe they are better drivers than the other folks on the roadway. This is one of the most prominent statistics that we brought forward as a result of the research. No surprise, drinking and driving is viewed as the most dangerous activity that a driver can partake in at 88%. But if you'll notice, closely in second place, tied, is drivers using cell phones and distracted driving at 83%. Interestingly enough, of the folks that rated distracted driving and cell phone use as the second most dangerous issue they face on the roadways, over half of those drivers admitted to partaking in using their cell phone while they drove within the last 30 days, and over 20% admitted to texting and driving in the last 30 days. So it's very much a society of do as I say, not as I do. Drivers believe they can safely talk and text, but the other person in the other car can't. Why? What did we find out as a result? Distraction is a big issue. It affects perception. That is, as we're driving down the roadway, talking on our cell phone or texting, we may not notice the child running towards the roadway. It affects our judgment. We need to decide or think about what we're going to do. Are we going to swerve? Are we going to blow our horn? Are we going to brake suddenly? What action will we take? And then finally, actually taking that action of deciding once we've decided what to do. Now you can imagine, if we slow down people's perception, judgment, and action, individually, that's serious. Collectively, that can be deadly. So we found that our traffic safety culture needs improvement. There needs to be outrage. 40,000 people on our roadways every year and 2.5 million injuries on our roadways every year is unacceptable. put that in perspective, we kill more people on our roadways every year than we killed in the entire Vietnam War. We need a significant shift in values. People believe what they do in their cars on public roadways is their right. Unfortunately, what they don't understand is the part of the phrase public roadways and the fact that their actions impact the lives and safety of others. And finally, a change in definitions from accident to crash. People often say, well, roadway accidents happen. Well, they don't happen. People choose to speed and drive. People choose to drink and drive. People choose to text and drive. These are not things that are forced upon them. These are things they choose to do. As a result, we have distracted driving, speeding, impaired driving, etc. AAA believes we need to address distracted driving in a comprehensive manner in order to make sustained, significant progress. Why do we say comprehensively? Because we know things like text messaging are serious enough to warrant its own statute. As Representative Hornstein mentioned, we were the third state in the nation to pass a text messaging ban. Currently, 19 states have done so as well. However, the law cannot possibly enumerate any and all specific instances or modes of distraction in an ever-growing legal laundry list. You know, as legislators, laws follow action. So it's very difficult to get ahead of action until it's actually occurred. But we know what the distractions are. People are reading behind the wheel. They're eating. They're drinking. They're doing personal hygiene kinds of issues. There's no surprise. There's nothing there that we don't know about. But there's always new and more interesting things that people are bringing into their vehicles as they try to multitask. Well, as we all try to multitask in our lives, it can make us more effective in some ways. In other ways, in the case of my husband, it drives him crazy when I multitask. But multitasking behind the wheel is not only dangerous, it can be deadly. And along with developing a list, it's not addressing what is the underlying issue of driver responsibility to avoid and or preclude distraction. We know people look to the law for guidance in the realm of traffic safety and acceptable behavior. And while nearly all states have reckless driving laws against driving in an overtly or irresponsible manner, they do not target and are not consistently applied to distracted driving. So I provided a couple of handouts in your packets for you. One is an overview of the traffic safety culture. And if you're interested in more statistics or more background on the survey itself, I'd encourage you to take a look at AAAFoundation.org. I've also provided a handout that talks about a comprehensive distracted driving law rather than taking each piece of distraction in a piecemeal basis where we're continually chasing bad behavior. I appreciate your time, and once all the other presenters are done, I'd be happy to take any questions at your convenience. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Weinholzer. And I was made aware of a piece that was done last night on KSTP, and I watched it, and as I watched it, I thought it would, since it's a short clip, I thought it would be useful to share with the committee. I found this quite a compelling piece. We have, again, footage of some of this behavior that's been described, and really one has to see it to believe it. And I think when you look at the press release that the AAA did back in July, distracted driving, the top reason that 35% of drivers feel less safe than 5 years ago. I think you'll see why here in a minute. And I guess the last thing I'd want to mention before this gets queued up is that there was a piece in the New York Times about the Detroit Auto Show in January, and apparently there were a number of vehicles there that are now outfitted with internet access on the dashboard. So this is going to be an increasing problem, and that's why I feel urgency that we address it now. So we'll queue up this about 2.5 minute, just under 3 minute piece from last night's 10 o'clock news, and then we'll be on with our special guest from the National Safety Council. So Ms. Mann will push.
Text and drive. You can be just as dangerous as someone who's drunk. That's what state troopers tell us. Still, we found driver after driver distracted.
Texting and driving is illegal here in Minnesota, but you'd hardly know it just by looking around. Tom Hauser is live with how troopers are enforcing this fairly new law. Tom?
Yeah, you know, one state trooper told me today it's pretty easy to find people texting and driving at night for one very simple reason. The glow of their cell phone tends to give them away. But as we found out, it's not hard to find them in broad daylight. We're fast becoming the distracted generation behind the steering wheel, talking on the phone, talking and programming a GPS. But this might be the most dangerous distraction yet, texting while driving.
Yep, she is. Yep, there you go.
State Trooper Mike Gensmer sees it every day. He spots this woman texting at a stoplight and follows her.
See how she's weaving? She's weaving pretty good there.
He pulls her over after six blocks.
Now I looked over. I saw you texting.
Reading my text?
Reading your text or texting, whatever.
The woman says she wasn't aware it's illegal to even read text or email while driving in Minnesota.
I'm Tom Hauser from Channel 5.
Okay. You're not going to put
nope,
me
we
on
don't, we don't, we
She agreed to talk to us if we didn't identify her.
How surprised were you when he told you about what he witnessed?
I was surprised. I didn't think it was true. I did not think I swerved. And if I did, and if it is like a drunk driver, then I'm glad it is illegal.
Texting while driving can carry up to a $300 fine. In 2008, when the law went into effect, the State Patrol issued 17 citations and 24 warnings. In 2009, the numbers jumped to 124 citations and 153 warnings.
And I look for people that their heads are bob up and down.
They're not difficult to find.
A lot of people don't text up in their up here because it's easily visible. They'll keep it down by their legs or in their lap, and it's a little more hidden.
This high school student in Edina narrowly avoids a rear-end collision while texting. But it's not just teenagers. We clocked this guy on 35W texting for at least 30 seconds, or nearly a half mile. We showed our video to the State Patrol.
If you just look at when he looks down, how much space is covered in those few moments when he's not paying attention to the road.
And if a car stops ahead of him, what's going to happen?
He's going to barrel right into it.
And troopers tell me that looking away from the road, even for a few seconds while you check a text message, can be deadly when you're traveling 60 or 70 miles per hour. Tomorrow in the Minnesota State Capitol, they will be having a hearing about distracted driving laws and possibly adding some in the future. Reporting live in St. Paul, Tom Hauser, 5 Eyewitness News.
So it was the 35W one that really grabbed me. So members, we have a very special presenter here. Mr. David Teeter from the National Safety Council is with us. From Chicago. He's originally from Ohio and Michigan. No, Michigan is where you live, but the Safety Council's in Chicago. And he's really one of the nation's foremost experts on distracted driving. And we are very, very pleased that you're with us today. And welcome to our committee and welcome to Minnesota.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein. And thank you for taking an interest in this very important topic. And it's a topic that I became involved in a few years ago as a result of an incident in my neighborhood, which I'll share with you. But I'm relatively new to the traffic safety business. I was just kind of cruising through life, working in Michigan, talking on my phone while I drove all the time. And there was an event in our neighborhood that caused me to look at some of the research on this issue. And this was 6 years ago. And I was shocked, surprised, almost angry at what I found about how dangerous this activity is and that we don't know about it. So it is new. If you think about it, we've been driving cars for 100 years. We've been talking on telephones for about 75. We've only combined those two activities to any great degree in the last 5 or 10 years, and texting only in the last year or two. So we've never had to understand what happens in our brains when we talk on a telephone. We were always sitting in a chair connected by a cord. It was a safe environment to be in. But now today, we can be connected 24/7, and lots of us actually like being connected 24/7. Some of us don't, but our kids certainly do. You know, if you think about it, try taking away a cell phone from a 16-year-old and see the reaction you get. It's almost like taking a drug away from an addict or a bottle away from alcohol. It's almost like they're addicted to it. And actually, there's some new research out that says there might even be a little dopamine release in the brain when that text message sound comes in and we look at the phone to see who it is. Which means we may be dealing with something very new. This may be more difficult than getting people to put seatbelts on or slow down. This may be a challenge that we haven't quite had before, and I want to share some of that with you today. First of all, just a little bit about motor vehicle crashes. Gail mentioned this, so I won't go through it. But If you take that 40,000 number she mentioned, that's 100 people a day. 100 people a day die in traffic in traffic crashes in this country. I read the paper this morning. I believe they said 42 people have died because of Toyota accelerator problems over the last 10 years. 42 people over the last 10 years. We are very interested in that. We're holding congressional hearings. We had the CEO from Toyota come over from Japan. We ought to be doing all that stuff. That's extremely important. It's a terrible thing. But just today, 100 people are going to die on our nation's roadways because of driver error. We estimate that about 80% of that is caused by driver error. If you're between the age of 1 and 35, it's the leading cause of all death. So cancer, diabetes, any kind of other accidental death, you're more likely to die in a car crash than anything if you're between the age of 1 and 35. Just to see how our society has kind of taken this need to be connected and brought it into the vehicle, I'm guessing most of you in this room don't know what pasting is, but if you go to a high school and you ask the kids, they'll know what it is. This is the way they've been able to text a little easier, by pasting the phone to the steering wheel. This is how prolific this activity has become. What causes crashes? I mentioned about 10% to 13% are vehicle maintenance causes. Environmental factors, traffic conditions, weather conditions, 20%. Somewhere between 70 and 90% of all crashes are caused by driver behavior. So you could easily argue these aren't accidents. These are things that can be prevented. And again, 100 people a day. When I start looking at this several years ago, I mentioned there was a lot of research. There's over 100 studies that have been done on this. Scientists have been looking at this for a long time. Now, I want to put a little caveat in this. Not all traffic safety research, there's not a silver bullet. There's limitations to every methodology that's used. A lot of work's done in traffic simulators, and people say, well, you can't actually crash a simulator. You can't get hurt. So people behave differently in a simulator than they do on the road. Some big studies called epidemiological studies have looked at what causes crashes, and they have a little trouble controlling the variables well enough. A newer method called naturalistic studies are putting cameras in cars and watching what people do, but yet they have trouble recording. They don't record any impaired driving, so you wonder if people really do behave naturally when they know they got a lot of cameras watching. Plus, they've got real small sample sizes to this point. So, you know, unfortunately, we can't take the risk of hurting people to find out exactly what causes car crashes. So we have to look at all the evidence. We have to look at all the research and see if we have any trends. We think we do. We clearly think we do in distracted driving. The National Safety Council just released in January a new study where we've been able to determine, based on just a couple of assumptions, and they're both assumptions that are pretty widely accepted, that 28% of all traffic crashes today are caused by cell phone distracted drivers. Not just distracted drivers, cell phone distracted drivers, over 1/4 of all crashes. Now, we don't know how many fatalities that causes. We didn't have the data to collect that. But if you believe that 11% of all drivers are on a cell phone at any given time, and those numbers come from studies from NHTSA and the Department of Transportation, and if you believe that by using a cell phone, you're 4 times more likely to get in a crash, and that comes from multiple different kinds of studies and different methodologies, the rest is pure mathematics to tell us that 28% of all crashes are caused by cell phone distracted drivers. I want to talk just a little bit about the science. Scientists who study traffic crashes lump the distractions into 3 categories. Visual, when we take our eyes off the road; mechanical, when we take our hands off the wheel; and cognitive, when we take our minds off the task of driving. Many of us have been driving for many, many years. It becomes second nature. It seems to us that it's very easy to do. Driving is a very difficult task. That's why so many early drivers have so many crashes. It's very difficult to learn how to drive. There's lots of different stimuli coming at us all the time. We have to constantly sort out what's important and what isn't important. Maybe that's why we have so many crashes and so many people die. When we're visually or mechanically distracted, and I know we've probably all done this, you fumbled in a purse or a briefcase in the passenger seat, you know you shouldn't be doing it, you know you're distracted, what do? Though? You limit the time and duration. You don't take your eyes off the road for 4 seconds to look in a briefcase. You take it off for 1 second, you glance back up. When we're cognitively distracted, we don't know we're distracted, so it lasts much longer. All distractions probably aren't equal. I can't imagine any distraction that would be worse than a visual distraction. If our eyes aren't on the road, we can't be any more distracted. But when we consider what causes crashes, what hurts people, what injures people, what kills people, we have to consider not only the degree of the distraction, but also how often it's happened. Scientists refer to that as risk exposure. And the thing that gets overlooked a lot, and this will be important as you talk about legislation next year, the thing that gets overlooked a lot is risk exposure to cell phone conversations. I used to drive back and forth from Grand Rapids, Michigan to Detroit for business for 20 years. I did it when cell phones first came out. When the coverage got good and my calls didn't get dropped, I'd schedule business meetings, business calls for the middle of the trip, which, by the way, is our state capital, Lansing, right in the middle. I'd be on a 20-minute call, and I'd hang up the phone, and I couldn't remember if I'd driven through Lansing yet. I'd have to wait until I saw a road, something on the road that I recognized a mile away. There was a big distraction going on there, and it should have been a clue to me that something was happening in my brain. Now, of that two-hour drive, if I talked on the phone for 2 hours, I was dialing and taking my eyes off the phone, which is the equivalent of texting as well, for maybe, 60 seconds to 2 minutes. And that was a serious distraction. But I was cognitively distracted for an hour and 58 minutes. So the odds of me getting in a crash were much greater from the cognitive distraction than from the mechanical or visual distraction. Texting is terrible. It is an extremely high-risk activity. But when we all drive home tonight, we're much more likely to get hit and hurt by someone who's talking on a cell phone as opposed to taking their eyes off it to dial. So keep that in mind as you look at these distractions and talk about legislation. Most of us focus, and actually most researchers have focused on visual and mechanical distractions because we understand. We don't understand cognitive distraction. A simple test I'll give you. How many of you are able to watch a television show, follow the plot, and talk to somebody else on a phone at the same time? Most people say, I can't do that. I've got to do one or the other. Well, then I've got to ask you, how can you drive a 6,000-pound vehicle down the road in a dynamic environment with things happening all the time while you talk to somebody on a cell phone? The answer is you can't do it safely. We do it. We don't have a crash. We got away with it. We assume we're good at it. We keep doing it. But we're not. And if something happens and a kid runs out in front of you or a light happens to be there, a red light, while you're engaged in something specifically engaging, you're not going to see it. You're going to run away with it. I want to just talk about a couple of quick studies that have been done. The University of Utah wanted to see how cell phone driving compares to drunk driving. So they took 40 people, put them in a simulator, had them drive a baseline course, and scored their driving performance. They took the same 40 people, had them drive a different course but same difficulty. They had them talk on a handheld cell phone. Same 40 people, different course, same difficulty. Hands-free cell phone, same 40 people, different course, 0.08 blood alcohol level, no cell phone. And here are two of the major results. First of all, there was no difference between handheld and hands-free driving performance. They were both degraded equally. This is one of 30 studies that have come to that conclusion. There's not a single study, and I think I've read them all, that I'm aware of that says hands-free is safer. It's going to be a big issue when you talk about this and talk about legislation. There are 6 states in the United States that have passed handheld cell phone bans. I applaud them for their efforts, but we're very, very concerned that sends a message to the general public that if you use a hands-free device, you're being safe. And there's no research whatsoever to support that and a substantial amount of research to say you're not safe. Why is that? The cognitive distraction. It lasts so long, it's still there when you're engaged in a hands-free conversation. The only thing you're eliminating, in my example of my drive to Detroit, were the 2 minutes out of 2 hours of me dialing a phone. And when that all gets meshed together, it makes no impact on the driving performance. And then the second thing they found is that cell phone drivers had slower reaction times than those with the 0.08 blood alcohol level. There's been a couple other studies, not quite as good as this one, that have come to that conclusion. Yeah. It should scare us to death. I do want to point out a couple things that are important to know. All the studies that have looked at this have only looked at the 0.08 blood alcohol level. No one's looked at a higher level, which many times are the ones involved in serious crashes with impaired driving. And also, please keep in mind that the cell phone driver, anytime they hang up the phone, is no longer impaired. The drunk driver is impaired for the whole trip. So I'm not equating this to drunk driving, but I'm saying the distraction at the time when it's happening is every bit as bad as the impairment that you see in a 0.08 blood alcohol driver, which may explain why we're seeing so many crashes. Cognitive distraction, this is a really good study just done, and this is the last one I have, but the folks at Carnegie Mellon were able to take a driving simulator and combine it with an MRI machine so they could see activity in the brain when you're driving, see what part of your brain is lit up and used for the task of driving. They then introduced a cell phone conversation to see what happened. And here's the result. If you look at the figure on the left, That's how much your brain is lit up when you're driving. That's the part of the brain you're using for the task of driving. When they added a conversation, they had a 37% reduction in that brain activity after they added the conversation. That's a very good depiction, very good picture of what cognitive distraction looks like. So if you put it all together, and there's a few other studies I normally talk about, but in the sense of time I want, human error causes the vast majority of crashes. Cell phone drivers are 4 times more likely to get in a crash than non-cell phone drivers. Your reaction times are slower than 0.08 blood alcohol level. Hands-free is as dangerous as handheld. We get this thing called inattention blindness from cognitive distraction, where we don't see stoplights and stop signs, which are especially dangerous types of crashes. And there's a 37% reduction in the part of the brain we need for the task of driving. Lastly, and I touched on this earlier, voluntary compliance is difficult. It's hard for a well-meaning employee of a company that has a policy against cell phone driving, or a well-meaning child of a parent who has a policy, to say, I'm not going to answer the phone when it rings. We've been conditioned our whole lives to do it. And as I mentioned, activities like emailing and texting, there might even be some addictive qualities to it. Briefly, a few misperceptions. It's no more dangerous than putting on makeup, eating fast food, and so forth. All distractions are dangerous. But you have to consider prevalence and risk exposure. And when you do that, nothing is in the class or even close to the use of cell phones while driving. We watch this stuff closely. We're not aware of many crashes resulting from people putting on makeup. I wish no one put on makeup while driving, but we aren't aware of a lot of crashes. We believe 11%, the federal government believes 11% of all drivers at any given time are on a cell phone. If 11% of all drivers at any given time were putting on makeup, we'd be sitting here talking about laws to do something about that. I mean, it stands alone. And these other distractions are serious, but most of them don't involve cognitive distraction, which is the sneaky one. There isn't enough evidence to prove that crashes are happening. It's a little bit of an Achilles heel for us, and the reason is it's hard to report. Law enforcement is very challenged to collect this information. Right now, the only thing they can do is ask the driver if they were on the cell phone, and they have to take the driver's word for it. It's almost impossible. It probably varies from state to state, but it's almost impossible to subpoena cell records, and you also have to know the exact second of the crash and have cell records to know for sure if the driver is on the phone. It's greatly underreported. We think that may change in the future, but right now it's difficult to collect those data. No more dangerous than talking to a passenger. Great question. Great concern. Talking to a passenger can be distracting, although we've got some preliminary evidence that actually says for an adult driver, a front seat passenger is actually makes you safer. So for those of you who hate backseat drivers and hate your spouse telling you to watch out for that red light, and unfortunately, they make you safer. And the reason is they're in the same environment. If there's a needed pause in conversation, it happens. If a light suddenly turns yellow and you have to make a decision if you're going to stop, you stop talking. There's something about a phone that demands your attention first, and it's a sense of urgency. You have to reply to the person. So you direct your attention to the phone call and not to driving. That doesn't seem to happen when there's a front seat passenger in the car. Three solutions: education, legislation, enforcement, engineering, and technology. I won't talk much about those, but I do want you to understand that there's significant public support for folks like yourselves to do something about distracted driving. When you ask people if they support texting legislation, it's up in the 90%. It's virtually unanimous. When you ask people if they support handheld cell phone bans, it's up in the 80% area. If you ask people if they support all cell phone bans, it's in the 60% area. So the public, who doesn't really understand cognitive distraction, but they watch people drive and they say something's wrong. They're not in the zone. They don't know what they're doing. We need to do something about that. So there's pretty substantial public support. There's very little organized opposition to these laws. There was a time when the wireless industry and the auto industry weren't sure it was the right thing. I believe both of them, I think some of them are going to talk later, but I believe both of them are not taking those positions anymore, and they're actively supporting texting legislation. As an example of that, I'll just read this in case you can't see the screen. This comes from a very prominent website. It says, scientific research on the subject of wireless phone use and driving has been conducted worldwide for several years. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the available research indicates that using a wireless phone while driving degrades a driver's performance, and this is important, whether it's a hands-free or handheld wireless phone. They go on to say, for your well-being and the well-being of those around you, you should consider turning your phone off and allowing calls to go to voicemail while driving. Who do you think says that on their website? That's on Verizon's website. Now, Verizon says this on their website. Maybe there's something to it. Could be someone from Verizon's going to be here. Nope. Oh, yes. So well, I'm sure they'll have something to say about it. Verizon, by the way, I compliment as one of the leaders in trying to do something about this. And AT&T is about to do some things, too. And the National Safety Council has a very close relationship with those companies and with CTIA, the association that represents them in Washington. That's all I have. I'll be here for questions later, but I do want to close with just a couple of comments about the impact this is having. And folks, it's serious. And I've had the opportunity the last few years to meet a lot of the people that Secretary LaHood met with. I was part of that meeting when he met with the victims. And there's stuff happening every day, probably more so than you know. I think everybody's probably aware that 25 people were killed when a train engineer was texting and ran a red light in Southern California a couple years ago. Margay Ski, 13 years old, I know her mother very well. She was sitting on a school bus when a big rig driver, distracted on his cell phone, slammed into the back of it. Everybody got off but Margay, and the bus burst into flames before she got off, and she, they believe, was burned alive. Jay and Jean Good had just picked up their daughter, JC, from college in Pennsylvania. They'd just gone to graduation. She graduated from college. They were on their way home. A distracted driver caused a crash that killed Jay and Jean. JC was sitting in the back seat. She was seriously injured but survived. And she's working really hard on cell phone legislation in the state of Pennsylvania now. One of the worst ones, Bailey Goodman and four friends in upstate New York. Five beautiful young women just graduated from high school, all going to college, all on the cheer squad. Driving an upstate New York road, they crossed the center line, they hit an 18-wheeler, burst into flames, all five died. Cell phone records showed that all five had been texting prior to the accident. Jason Norling, a police officer in Houston, Texas, was on the side of the road writing a citation. Distracted driver drove off the road and hit him and killed him. If I was in law enforcement or a motorcyclist, I'd be especially afraid of cell phone drivers because of the nature of the distraction. I want to mention briefly, this group, modeled after MAD, was just incorporated in December. It's a nonprofit. It's founded by five people who have all lost loved ones, four children and a mom. And it's called Focus Driven Advocates for Self-Free Driving. They're going to start telling stories like MAD people have been doing, and they're going to do victim impact panels, and they're going to do a lot of victim services moving forward. We're very excited about these guys getting off the ground. Secretary LaHood introduced this group to the nation on January 12th in D.C. And then lastly, I just want to close with the event that happened that caused me to get involved in this. This may be hard to see, but you've got a divided highway here, and you've got two northbound lanes on the top and two southbound lanes on the bottom. You can see on the bottom there that the southbound lane would stop for a red light. There were four cars and a school bus in the right-hand lane. There was no car in the left-hand lane. And the red vehicle you see on the diagram sped past the four cars and the school bus, and she didn't hit the first car crossing through. She hit the blue car, which was the third or fourth car to come through the intersection with the green light. And witnesses in the bus and in the cars saw her talking on her phone and looking straight out the windshield, not looking down, not texting, not dialing, looking straight out the windshield. And the crash reporter on her vehicle said she never touched her brakes, and she hit the blue car 48 miles an hour. The resulting crash killed a 12-year-old boy, and that boy was my son, Joe. And I'm sure I don't have to tell somebody it changes your life forever. As I mentioned at the time, I was a heavy cell phone driver. I was doing research work for the auto industry, and I looked at some of the things I've talked about today, and I was shocked at what I found. And I said, why don't we know more about this? Why don't we do something about this? This was 6 years ago. I'll just close by saying, I think it's wonderful that you're looking at leading the nation on legislation. I'll tell you one of my major objectives at the National Safety Council is to find a state or a major city to put in a total ban on cell phone driving and lead the nation. I believe by doing that, we'll see crash statistics drop dramatically and very quickly. We'll be able to do a lot of study. It'll be easier for law enforcement to enforce if it's a total ban. And I believe, quite frankly, that people are going to find out what I found out, and that is that all those calls weren't that critical. And I'm still getting my business done, and I'm still staying in touch, and I'm more focused on my driving, and the world didn't stop, and I'm more relaxed when I get out of the car. So that would be a bold step, but if this group of people would like to pursue that, I sure would like to help anyway. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Teeter. Appreciate it. And members, what we'd like to do is, I know you have questions, and we have just a couple more presentations. We have the Department of Public Safety, and we have people from the telecommunications industry that are with us, also with the Truckers Association. So if we could really, for the people that are presenting now, you may have had perhaps some more material than we have time for. If you could perhaps condense your testimony so that maybe about 10 after 2, we could start with our Q&A, so we have a good solid 20 minutes for members to ask questions of any panelist that's presented. I'd appreciate it. So if the Department of Public Safety can, I know you have two presentations, if you could maybe condense that down into 10 minutes, I'd that would really help move us along. So thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susie Palmer. I'm with the Office of Traffic Safety in the Department of Public Safety. And I will condense this down. I can get there. It's already been brought to your attention that the leading cause of death of those between 1 and 35 years of age is traffic crashes, and this is how it breaks down. 39% of those who are simply too young to die are dying from crashes. Major diseases, 8%. Suicide, 11%. Homicide, 15%. Skip that one. We've already gone over what distracted driving all encompasses. A little bit about distracted driving in Minnesota. Over the past 3 years, or 3 years from 2006 to 2008 in Minnesota alone, nearly 60,000 crashes were caused by driver inattention or distraction. That killed over 200 people, and there were over 1,000 severe injuries in those crashes. The majority of 50% of them occurred in the afternoons. People on their way home from work, on the way home from work to after work activities, or people at lunch, not the normal what we see. And a lot of them occur on county and state roadways. When we look at single vehicle crashes in Minnesota, the top five contributing factors on every crash report that an officer fills out, they have an opportunity to put down two things that they feel caused the crash. One of those are intended or distracted driving. It's also speeding. There's impairment, failure to yield right away, all kinds of things. The second most frequent one in single vehicle crashes is driver inattention and distraction. It's a little bit higher for people as they age. If you look at multiple vehicle crashes, it's higher for teenagers. They're more likely to be involved in a multiple vehicle crash where distracted driving was a factor. If we look at distracted driving fatalities and serious injuries by time of day, there it is. It's from the noon hour to 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock when we're on our way home. I don't really have a good explanation for why that's happening. By month, it's the summer months. Just like all fatalities, they're more prevalent in the summer months. The economic impact, a lot of things go into that. Wages and productivity losses, medical expenses, administrative expenses at insurance agencies and medical places, the damage to the motor vehicle itself. What we're trying to do about it is we're kind of working on two levels. One, we're starting to think about and to fund some enforcement of the laws that are presently out there. The texting and website ban that Minnesota has, and then some of the things that when you are distracted, some of the behaviors you might exhibit, like crossing the line, or driving too slow for traffic, or not starting when the light turns to green, things like that. So we will, this year, for the first time in August, have a period when we're actually going to fund enforcement to concentrate on some enforced driving, distracted driving enforcement. And we think a lot of that will simply be public information rather than writing tickets, but stopping and talking to people who are doing something, crossing that center line, and talking to them about how important it is that they focus on the roadway environment and not on something else. And the last few things I have on here, some of the websites that you've heard mentioned are on here. Distraction.gov is the national DOT website on distracted driving. Fastlane.gov is the blog site for the national DOT. Focus Driven, which someone else has just mentioned to you, their website is on here. And another public nonprofit, private nonprofit group, is Stay Alive, Just Drive from Florida, and their website is here. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Palmer. We're going to conclude our presentation from the Department of Public Safety with Major Tuckner, I think, is here. Before we get to you, Major, I did want to just let people know we have a couple of students from the High School of the Recording Arts here, and they've done some public service announcements on various traffic safety issues, so we appreciate that and hope that you'll spread the word about traffic safety. So welcome to the committee, Major. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Major Michelle Tuckner, Department of Public Safety, the State Patrol. I will keep my comments brief. The video that you showed from the KSTP clip, I think, is a good indication of the type of things that our troopers are out there trying to do today in addressing distracted driving. But distracted driving, as everybody has commented, isn't just about talking on cell phones. It's other things as well. It's eating, it's drinking, it's GPS devices, it's reading, it's a number of other factors. Our troopers come in contact most often with distracted drivers. Our first indication is their driving conduct. We may see somebody weaving. They may not start for a traffic light. They're driving too fast. They're driving too slow. It's unsafe lane usage. And when that occurs, we can take action. There are statutes that exist today that allow us to take enforcement action when people violate those laws. The other times that our troopers come in contact with distracted drivers are at crashes. If there was a witness that observed something, then under those circumstances, we're able to take some type of enforcement action, and we list that information on our accident reports. But most often, we see distracted drivers, we're not able to take action. We witness something in a vehicle. We may witness some driving conduct that's minimal but doesn't violate a law. They may be looking down while they're in their vehicle. They may have their hands off the wheels. But unless there's some violation of law, those are the times when it's difficult for us to take action against distracted driving. And so I think any language that lawmakers consider should incorporate, as Gail mentioned from the AAA, it should be all-inclusive. It isn't just about one particular thing. It isn't just cell phones. It's everything combined that causes problems for distracted drivers and the public that's motoring. We have, we try through our education, and I'm glad to hear that there were some students here that were doing public safety announcements. I know that the Department of Office of Traffic Safety, Department of Public Safety, also has a contest to create a public safety announcement about no texting. So I encourage young people to get involved in that, and those are important messages that we get out. It's even more effective when those messages come from their peers. So that's a positive thing. I think education is important. Policy, the policy you folks said, is very, very important. And then the next step for us as law enforcement officers is take enforcement action. So I would encourage law enforcement, encourage lawmakers to consider all aspects of distracted driving when they consider writing some type of statute.
Thank you very much, Major Tuckner. So now I'd like to call on, I have Mr. McDermott, Mr. Bass, Mr. Moore. I don't know if you want to testify together or separately. I'm glad you're here, and as they're coming down, we also have, after this panel, we'll have very brief comments from Mr. Haslott, and then we'll get to your questions and answers. So all three of you, welcome to the committee, and when you start your testimony, just please state your name and affiliation for our record.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein and Chairman Murphy, for the opportunity, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bob Bass. I'm the president of AT&T Minnesota, and appreciate the opportunity to speak today. I'll condense, for the sake of time and understanding that your time is brief, I'll condense what I was going to present. AT&T realizes that wireless phones, if used improperly, can be a distraction while driving. However, as we've heard, drivers may engage in a number of potential other distractions behind the wheel, and we believe that improving driving behavior can best be accomplished through education and enforcement of laws that deter and penalize irresponsible driving regardless of that cause. We have taken a very proactive approach at AT&T with public safety announcements with our own internal employees as well. We put six major components into a plan that we're now engaged in, and Mr. Teeter mentioned as well. On Monday, we launch a PSA project. We've had a number of them over the years, but in this particular case, we've been working with the National Safety Council, and it will launch on Monday, March 8th. And it will feature a number of PSAs that will have well-known spokespersons. We've used our position as one of America's leading advertisers to secure time slots for these PSAs, so they're actually when people are watching TV, so they'll be widely viewed. As part of that campaign as well, with education, we've also taken that to the same level with our employees. We have over 280,000 employees nationally. We operate one of the largest fleets in the country. So what we've done is we have banned our own employees from texting while driving. And in our employee driving classes, we have added a new section of it for everybody because they get their own AT&T driver's license when you operate and perform driving duties while working for AT&T. And part of that covers the dangers of using cell phones safely while you're driving. It bans texting and also, you know, other distractive things that happen while you're behind the wheel. So, you know, going through my, going through this very quickly, we understand, and it's a priority for AT&T, that our consumers use cell phones safely. We want all consumers who are using their cell phones to use them safely. We support the bans on texting while driving. We also support in our teen driving programs because we know that teen drivers and novice drivers, they perform differently behind the wheel. And we've advocated in our driver education programs that we provide for schools across the country that novice drivers under the age of 18 don't use their cell phones while they're in, don't use them at all. Unless if you have a reason to use it, you pull your car over and you dial. Chairman Ornstein, that's just kind of a real quick overview of what I had in my comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, and we do appreciate your sticking around. We will have, I'm sure, questions towards the end of the hearing. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is the hot seat. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike McDermott, and I'm the Executive Director of State Public Policy for Verizon Wireless in the Midwest. Thank you for this opportunity to address the committee on this important topic, driver safety. Verizon Wireless, like I believe all wireless companies, believes that the safety and well-being of our customers is our number one priority. That is why we were the first provider to support statewide hands-free legislation in those states where legislators have expressed a willingness to pass such a law. We, like our counterparts in the industry, also support legislation that prohibits operators of motor vehicles from texting while driving, which, as you know, is now law here in Minnesota. And we have supported legislation in the states that restricts the use of our service by drivers on learner's permits or those drivers under the age of 18, by drivers in school zones, or by school bus drivers behind the wheel. Let me emphasize that Verizon Wireless believes drivers must make the safe operation of their vehicle their primary focus while behind the wheel. And if drivers cannot safely talk on a hands-free device, we urge them not to make the call or receive a call until they are in a place where it is safe for them to do so, preferably while the car is in park and not on the side or shoulder of the road or highway. We were asked to speak to the technological advances on wireless technology, and technological advances have made drivers safer through partnerships with automobile manufacturers. Most cars sold today have Bluetooth technology installed, which reduces the needs for drivers to touch their handset. Voice recognition dialing has also seen dramatic advancements in technology, also reducing the need for drivers to physically touch the phone. You've heard about studies that conclude many different things about cell phone use and driver safety. And it is true, technology is evolving at a rapid rate that advances and ensures a safe driving environment for all. But this hearing and ensuring media coverage will help heighten the awareness of driver responsibility. CTIA, the Wireless Trade Association, has produced a brochure entitled With Wireless, Safety is Your Call. I was unable to get enough copies for this committee today, but I will forward them on to you, Mr. Chairman, before the end of next week. This brochure outlines 10 safety steps that consumers should follow when using their wireless device. I won't go through all 10, but to give you an example, step one is to know your phone and its features, such as speed dial, voice recognition dial, and redial. Step four, let the person you're speaking with know you're driving, and if necessary, suspend the call in heavy traffic or in a school zone or hazardous weather conditions. Don't take notes or look up phone numbers while driving. Simple common sense issues like that. Technology is designed to make us safer. What we thought inconceivable 3 years ago are commonplace today. Turn-by-turn directions through our Navigator product reduce the need to hold printed maps and directions, for example. Some model cars can even parallel park for you, so technology advancements through smart telematics can make for a safer environment. Again, Verizon Wireless is your partner in ensuring a safe environment for all. We look forward to working with you, the legislature, to develop laws that make sense and are in the best interest of the citizens of Minnesota. Thank you for letting me speak today, and like Mr. Bass, I'll be pleased to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. McDermott. And finally, we have Mr. Moore, and then very briefly, we'll have Mr. House-Lawton after that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. So my name is Scott Moore. I am the Vice President of Marketing for Best Buy Mobile, which is a joint venture between Best Buy here in the U.S. and Carphone Warehouse, which is the leading independent mobile phone retailer of Europe. And I appreciate you having a retail voice in this discussion, because I think oftentimes we neglect the fact that retailers, and we are both carrier and retailer, there are tens of thousands of handshakes every day and discussions that go on in a real way between consumers who want to learn more about products and services and people in retail. So thank you very much. I think Best Buy, as everyone knows here in Minnesota, we've got a long history of helping people get more and get the most out of their technology. And that's fairly well known. We also, as a concerned company, try to help our consumers along when they're facing challenges and need to understand more. Most recent example of that was the digital TV transition. So Best Buy played a big part in that. And we want our customers to get the most out of it every single time. Personally, as you think about this case, and I've sat on a panel at Consumer Electronics Show recently, this is very different from some of the issues we've faced in the past. If you miss your Price is Right, it's one thing. If you miss, you make a mistake on the road, it's entirely different, which you heard earlier today. So we take this seriously at Best Buy. So the first point, I think, was we hear it. I see it every day. I saw it in the nature of the meetings I'm in at Best Buy. Usually you'd have a meeting with yourself and a merchant partner to figure out what to do. And in these meetings on this topic, what's the right thing to do? You have government relate. You have a much more sophisticated group of people who have to think through how do we help our customers in this moment. I agree with the observation that there's no silver bullet. We support legislation, but it hasn't proven to be enough. And I think one thing we've learned in working with consumers is they don't always do exactly what we'd like them to do. This is particularly vexing And our belief is you need a very comprehensive approach in terms of helping consumers get the right equipment, use it well, and use it safely. So to that point, our view is in order to get consumers to do the right thing, they're going to want to. There's high consumer demand. Consumers are going to want to continue to use their products, and that's obvious based on your own personal interactions with people as you're driving, as you're talking. Everyone knows it's a big issue. I think we would look to our carrier partners to figure out what to do, to government to figure out what to do, to education consumer campaigns, also to the equipment manufacturers who, so I was in a meeting this morning with an equipment manufacturer. One of the topics is what can we do to help our customers? I think we all know there are solutions that are out there today. They are not good enough to meet the needs of us all. And so we believe both through hardware and software solutions, we can really advance what it's like to be out there as a consumer. I'd say my final point is simply, I think, and it echoes back to my first point, retail can play a big role in helping society through this challenge because we're in a unique position to pull together all the partners. We think holistically, and really we're about serving our customers. You know, we're all about serving our citizens. We believe retail can have a really positive, constructive presence in this dialogue moving forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. And then finally, we have Mr. John Houseladen from the Truckers Association. I want to thank this panel from the telecommunications industry for both coming to the hearing and for your constructive testimony. So, Mr. Houseladen, just a couple of minutes here, then we'll get to Q&A.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Houseladen, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. I can sum up our presentation very simply in 6 words. Keep both hands on the wheel. If you see a document in front of you there, this is a self-education campaign that the trucking industry embarked on its own to draw attention to distracted driving. And what we determined in our own analysis was, in the end, personal responsibility is going to drive behavior on the road. And trucking companies already take this seriously. We already have practices, protocols, procedures in place. But we decided as an organization to give our members tools to help them do that job. If you would go to our website, you will find a whole section dedicated to keep both hands on the wheel. We provide for our members PowerPoints that they can use in their safety training meetings, sample policies that trucking companies are using for cell phone use, videos, and I really want to do a shout out to the National Safety Council, Minnesota Safety Council, and AAA. They're truly leaders in this. They have great resources that we use, we redirect people to, because it's going to be partnerships when it's all said and done about how to do this, how to make the road safer. Our focus is on truck drivers. What you have before you is a pledge. And we have this available to our members that they can take, they can adopt as a company, they can give to their drivers. You can drive the message home. We support the ban on texting while driving. And we do look forward next year and in coming years to the debate about how we do this right. It does need to be holistic. And of course, our challenge is our trucks are small businesses on wheels. They have to communicate at times. But how do you do it smartly? How do you do it safely? And how do you take advantage of in-cab technology that leapfrogs some of the handheld technology that's out there? We are working on that. So we thank you for the opportunity to talk about this, and we'd be happy to answer any questions. And I don't know if staff put copies of our pledge there. I know there are extra copies, so whatever extras, if they could be put there for the public, we would appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Houseladen. So, members, thank you very much. I know that people have been waiting patiently for questions. I believe I'll start a list here. Representative Swales is your first. Actually, before we start, just very briefly, came to my attention there was an article in yesterday's Times about electronic billboards, there'll be some discussion about that on our committee later in the session. There's an article in the packet for that. We're not going to have any testimony specifically about that today. So, now, members, Representative Swales, I have you down on the list, and please indicate to me or Ms. Brydick you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question is probably for Mr. Teeter, if he could come to the desk, please. First of all, Mr. Teeter and Mr. Chair, thank you so much for your testimony, and you have my deepest condolences for the loss of your son. But what a tremendous tribute to his life that you are doing this tremendous service to the public on his behalf. The question I have actually is about policies across the nation that have to do with the penalty phase for people who are, you know, they've created an accident or have caused a fatality. Is there inconsistency? Are there states moving toward a standard of what a penalty phase might look like? I do congratulate all the entities that talk about, you know, being proactive and trying to get the message out ahead of time. But sadly, as we've seen with drunk driving, there has to be a very high level of enforcement. Can you kind of enlighten us?
Yeah, probably a little bit. First of all, the laws, as you know, are new. You were the third one with the texting law, and that was, what, 2 years ago. So there's not a lot of experience in this regard. I will say that I'm aware that Utah probably has the strictest penalty phase in there. If you cause a crash that costs a life and you were texting, it's the same penalty as if you were drunk. It's several years in jail. It's vehicular homicide or something. Otherwise, every state varies tremendously in what the penalties are, and typically it's a law like careless driving or reckless driving that they use for the penalty phase. Now, I've talked to victims. I think there's one in Illinois where the driver who caused a fatality received a $50 fine, and that was it. In our case in Michigan, the young driver who by the way, I want to just say, a 20-year-old girl talking on the phone with her church where she volunteered for kids my son's age when she ran the red light, had no idea what she was doing was so dangerous. She pled guilty to negligent homicide and received a pretty substantial penalty. So it varies from state to state, but because we don't really have a lot of cell phone driving laws, there aren't specific penalties other than texting that address what you're asking. And that's an important part of your consideration, I think. What is the penalty?
Thank you. Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who can answer this. Somebody kind of alluded to the fact, and maybe it was law enforcement, but as fate would have it, in this committee, people that know me, I'm always in the wrong place at the wrong time, so I have my personal experiences on these things. I was T-boned last summer by a young man that was texting. He admitted on the scene he never seen my car. He didn't see the bicyclist I stopped for, and I was waved through the intersection. But law enforcement on the scene said that it was just too hard, that they didn't really have authorization in the law to get the cell phone records to even charge him with texting and causing the accident through distracted driving. So, you know, that's the kind of issue I think I'd like to understand, or how we get to those points, because if law enforcement doesn't witness it, what do we need to do so we can have access to those kind of records, especially if somebody, you know, underage is doing something illegally and they admit on the scene they obviously didn't see anything that was going on.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I'll answer it if that's okay. One of the challenges we have, not so much would it be in Minnesota now with texting laws where it's clearly illegal, but in a lot of states where it's not illegal to use a cell phone and drive. A personal experience in my neighborhood, we had a crash that sounded to me like a cell phone distracted driver, and it was a young man on his way to church who ran a stop sign that you assume he goes through all the time if he was on his way to church, and hit a mother in a minivan with three kids and killed one of the young children, and did that in broad daylight, and there's no real explanation. So I went to the deputy sheriff investigating, and I said, was there a cell phone involved? And he said, well, we don't know. There was one in the car, which there always is now. We've subpoenaed the records, but we won't get them. And I said, what do you mean you won't get them? He said, well, and I'm sure there's plenty of lawyers in the room, but my understanding was the way he explained it is a subpoena needs to be based on a search warrant, which needs to be issued on the suspicion of illegal activity. And using a cell phone and driving is not illegal. And so even if they can get a judge to issue the search warrant and they get a subpoena, the wireless companies, and I don't blame them, don't believe and don't release the records. I mean, I wouldn't do it either. They've got privacy issues for their customers to be concerned about. So it's a little bit of a catch-22 situation that we probably need good legislation in place that says this is an illegal activity before we can start collecting that information and prosecuting. Now, for some reason, I don't quite understand this, it's easier to get the cell phone records in a civil case than it is in a criminal case. So lots of times that's where it comes out, and that's where we find out what really happened.
Thank you. Senator Bono.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Teeter, you do make a good case for the total cell phone ban rather than just the hands-free, and I think probably states have been more willing to pass the hands-free because it's a little bit easier and there's less resistance. you mentioned that there was support from the various phone companies, and you even said Verizon, and we had the gentleman from Verizon here, but I didn't get that from, when I listened to the retailer and Verizon sitting at the table, it sounded to me like there, I wasn't so sure about that, that it sounded like you're kind of hanging your hat on, you know, safety is your call. You know, I assume that's about hands-free, and the Best Buy person seemed to be really referring to the best, to the hands-free situation. So could you clarify that?
Mr. McDermott?
Mr. Chairman, may I go back for a second about the issue
Please.
Of the subpoenas?
Yeah.
If we receive a subpoena, and I know we've had this debate on another subpoena bill here in Minnesota, our law enforcement response team does provide records with a subpoena. I think what Mr. Teeter is referring to is whether the judge would issue a subpoena for the records. It's not, I want to clarify, it's not the reluctance of the cell phone provider to turn those records over. If we receive a subpoena, it's a court order. We have to turn the records over. I think what Mr. Teeter was referencing was the actual the judge issuing a subpoena in the case, not whether the carrier would provide the records. I just want to clarify that.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Your question is?
Where do you stand, Mr. McDermott, on supporting a complete cell phone ban versus a hands-free?
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. We have been the industry leader with respect to all sorts of driver safety initiatives. Texting while driving in schools, school zones, construction zones, school bus drivers, kids under the age of 18, those on learner's permits. The issue of an outright ban, I don't believe we would support today for several reasons. First and foremost is that it really should be a federal issue, a federal issue meaning that you shouldn't have a geopolitical boundary where you would start legally in Wisconsin, drive over the border of Minnesota, and then be breaking the law. And there's very few laws that I know of on the books where you could actually start out doing something legally, cross a geopolitical boundary, and then be breaking the law.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. McDermott, how about the texting ban?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. McDermott.
I think it's also something that should be addressed at the federal level. But we do support the texting ban because that is clearly a very dangerous thing to be doing, holding a device in your hand, texting while you should be watching the road. And we support those texting bans as well. I think you would find those who are driving more apt to try to get around an outright ban when the phone, there's 91 million customers of Verizon Wireless, there's almost 270 plus million wireless customers today in the United States alone. I think you would end up creating an environment where people would try to circumvent it. Bluetooth technology, it would leave a lot of guesswork to law enforcement as to whether or not somebody was actually on a phone when they're not clearly having an earbud in their ear. It's through their speakers on their phone. But I think that education is an important component as well, which we partner with the National Safety Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. So we do believe in education. I just can't support a ban at this time.
Thank you.
Okay. Chairman Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. McDermott, as a customer.
Thank you, sir.
And so is Chair Hornstein, and I know several other people around the table are as well. You know, first I just want to say, you know, Verizon, AT&T, and several other providers have been upfront and provided education. I know that when we went back and got this one, there was a little thing in there, and the guy talked to us about, you know, our responsibilities. And, you know, that's great. But now in Minnesota that we've kind of weeded it down, this distracted driving down to several key issues inside the car, you know, we're going to have to take action sooner or later with cell phone use and maybe some of the other activity that goes inside the car. And, you know, we're not averse to your business at all. We want to partner with you, and because I think through technology there is a solution here. But you know, we kind of need you to get on board here and help us through this next stage. You know, we've been very proactive here, and we've taken the lead when the federal government could not. And if we wait for the federal government, we're going to be waiting for another Yucca Mountain or whatever the next issue may be. In other words, you know, it's like the snail on the turtle's back. You know, hey, slow down, slow down, slow down, you know, and that's kind of the federal government on our back sometimes. It feels that way. Now, I know that Secretary LaHood wants to press forward, and that's great, but, you know, there's this thing called Congress, and they may not be willing to, because this is a very political issue, and people are strapped to their cell phones these days. So if you know, Verizon, AT&T, and the other providers could come forward with some technology to help us, we'd really appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
So that we don't have to do it to you.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Mr. McDermott.
Senator, I appreciate those comments, absolutely. And I think that it's our record, Verizon Wireless's record on safety issues is unparalleled. I think we were the first one out of the box on several safety initiatives on behalf of our customers, but also those that are in a 360-degree radius of any of our customers who are on the road. So I'm not saying that we couldn't get there someday or that we won't get there someday. I think this is a legislative evolution, and this is something that I'll take back to our leadership of our company and let them know that Minnesota is serious.
Yep.
But thank you for your comments.
May I comment on that as well?
Yes.
I just want to say I've worked with the wireless industry and the individual companies now for 2 years, and they've been very supportive of what we're doing. I remember the first meeting I had with not you, but one of your big competitors, and I walked in. I was going to tell them their customers shouldn't use their phones while driving, and I thought I'd get run out, and just the opposite. Very, very interested in this research. I think this has caught all of us by surprise. Remember, this is an industry that just 20 years ago invented the car phone. They were called car phones. You couldn't get it any other place than in your car. It was a big box that went in the trunk or under the seat. And as I mentioned, we didn't know what went on in our brains when we were driving. So I think they're coming. They're certainly not fighting it. And I think it's an education process for everybody. It's a huge paradigm shift, so I think that's happening. And then the one other comment about federal, it really is the state's responsibility to do traffic laws. The federal government really has very little. They certainly can't do nationwide laws unless you're a trucker and you do interstate commerce. The only thing they can do is provide you with cash incentives to do what they want you to do or cash penalties if you don't. And most states don't like that very well. So it really is a state issue, unfortunately, because you do have conflicting laws when you cross state lines, but it is really your responsibility.
We're kind of running out of time. We have only a limited amount of time. I don't know, Representative Riddle, do you have a question? I wasn't sure. I don't know if it was just a friendly glance or a question.
Both.
Okay. I'm going to call on Representative Erdahl and Representative Jungbauer, and then we're going to, and Morrow, and then we're going to conclude the hearing. But I'd like just everyone to keep their questions really short and the answers really short.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just had the belief a little bit earlier that Major Tuckner wanted to respond to Senator Jungbauer's question.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Teeter answered the question. I couldn't speak specifically, Senator Jungbauer, to your instance that happened. I think most commonly, though, most law enforcement officers, if a driver made a statement that they were texting, chances are we would cite them, and that citation would be brought to court if the person pled not guilty and worked out there. I think he did a nice job of answering the question about the subpoenas, though, because that does get rather complex.
Thank you. Does that help?
That helped the other one, but I still have another.
Oh, okay. So very quickly, Senator Jungbauer.
I was going to make the statement that I would like to see a little more research on hands-free, and I have had a car phone since 1988. I am in sales and do a lot of traveling in my other job. And I do have in my Camry a full hands-free Bluetooth that dials without having to, you know, touch anything. I get voice recognition, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But I do think, based on having a phone since 1988, that there is a distinct difference between having to touch a phone and play with anything than when you have that full hookup that technology offers us today. And I'm not saying that I don't get distracted, because you do understand that you do still get distracted in a phone call, depending on what you're speaking of. But I would love to see, because I think there's a big difference between having to interact with your hands and things on the phone than having full hands free.
Thank you. And then for our last question, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you remember we saw a video in this committee a couple years ago which showed the eye movement of drivers and did call the question maybe whether there's a difference between hands-free and handheld. I would ask, Mr. Teeter, if you could just provide information at a later date, maybe to the committee chair, on expanding on cognitive and cognitive distraction. I thought maybe Representative Erdahl was going to ask whether eating a cheeseburger was the same kind of cognitive distraction as being on a cell phone. I don't want you to have to answer that now because time is short, but if you could provide us more information on the 30-plus studies on cognitive distraction and what that entails.
Yeah, by the way, they're available on our website, but I will make sure I forward them to the chairman's attention so he can distribute the 30 studies that talk about that. Also, within the next 2 weeks, and I'll make sure this gets to you, we're releasing about a 20-page white paper on why hands-free is still risky, and it goes through all of that and talks about brain research and science and so forth.
Okay. Well, thank you. And with that, members, we're going to do just a couple very quick pieces of business here. But I wanted to first thank everybody for your testimony, for coming. Again, this is going to be an ongoing work in progress with the many stakeholders that were here and others that weren't here, again, with the intention of really bringing something forward next year. So the senators can participate in this, but this is really a house piece of business. Representative Swales, the minutes from our last... Oh, we don't have minutes. Okay, we don't have minutes. Okay, so that's easy. But House members, we will have a hearing of this committee tomorrow. We have several bills. We're going to be, for those of you on the Finance Committee, you have this already in your calendars, but for those of you who don't, we're using the Finance Committee's meeting time tomorrow to do bills, room 10 at 4:30. So the Transportation Policy and Transit and Oversight Division of the House will meet tomorrow at 4:30 in room 10. So with that, members, again, thanks, everybody, and this meeting stands adjourned.